Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hello, one and all, and welcome back to The Damn Short. I'm John Iadarola. Today is a fantastic Monday, which means Francesca Fiorentin joins us once again. Francesca, how's it going? How you doing? How you feeling?
I'm struggling. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm you know, slowly feeling more normal. Just, you know, hacking up bits of phlegm. Good morning. I hope you're eating lunch or breakfast or whatever.
Not anymore. Thankfully, though, it's the only sort of hack you'll ever be. Anyway, Francesca, of course, is several days into what is thankfully a mild case of COVID. Glad to see that. Not that it exists, but that it's mild. Get vaccinated, get boosted, everybody, if you haven't already. Please. We're trying to avoid another spike. By the way, good news started off. I just saw this. LA County COVID hospitalizations are at their lowest since July 2021. That's good. That's almost a year. That's some progress, baby.
A year.
I'll take what I can get.
I need more than that. I need like 2019. No. I'd be like, oh, okay.
No, we're not even at 2020 yet, but we're working on it and we're hoping to get there and we can do it together. There's a lot of things, in fact, that we can do together, like discuss the news, which is what we're gonna do for the next hour and a half or so. So thank you for joining us. We've got a ton to break down, including some fascinating developments in Ukraine, hints at what might be coming soon, movement on the Supreme Court in a couple different directions simultaneously, creepy attacks against AOC, and a whole lot more besides. So if you wanna help out the stream, you can do that by hitting the like button, sharing it, letting people know that we're live and all that. And if you wanna send us comments, tweets, super chats, and all of that, we'll respond as we go. But with that said, Francesca, you ready to talk about some news?
Yeah, sorry, I just saw a funny tweet. Yeah.
What's the funny tweet? Do you want to read to present it to the classroom?
Yeah, Abby Crutchfield writes, "I honestly think we're asking too much of cauliflower." And I agree. Yeah. As someone who likes cauliflower for what it is, I don't need it fried and made to taste like chicken wings. Chicken wings can do that.
Yeah, well, Impossible Chicken, very good. Yeah, I feel a little bit weird when I consider like cauliflower pizza crust, and I would never eat it by itself. It's like I've never appreciated it. Anyway, great tweet. And so with all that said, let's jump into serious stuff with this.
The use of chemical weapons, is that a red line in your mind for whether NATO should at least intervene to protect civilians in some form in Ukraine?
I think that it should be, Chuck, and I think that we in the West, the United States and NATO, we need to stop telling the Russians what we won't do. We need to be very clear that we are considering all options, that the use of chemical weapons is certainly something that would alter our calculation. And we need to understand that, you know, we shouldn't be in the business of some have called it self-deterrence. Putin's actions so far have demonstrated, first of all, that the Russian military is nowhere near as capable as the world perhaps thought it was, probably not as capable as Putin thought it was. And they need to understand that if the brutality here increases, the United States will contemplate and consider every possible range of actions along with our NATO allies. And I think
so Liz Cheney shocking the world. For the first time ever, she thinks, hey, maybe we go to war. Maybe there's an excuse. Maybe there's a rationale. And In this case, it would be the use of chemical weapons, which, by the way, earlier in this month, Russia accused Ukraine of harboring chemical weapons. Russia, I should say, and then also former lefties on YouTube accusing them of preparing to use chemical weapons, which US officials believe to be a false flag strategy to give Russia justification to use its own chemical or biological weapons. Joe Biden has warned that Russia would endure severe consequences if chemical weapons were unleashed. They have not been more specific than that. Liz Cheney has been. She wants them to be severe and military. By the way, we're like a week and a half into the biolabs thing, and thus far, no chemical weapons use by any side, which is exactly what we would want. But Francesca, what do you think about Liz Cheney there?
Oh man, I mean, it's just kind of adorable because it's like, oh, you're still your daddy's girl. Like, you're still a Cheney after all these years. You want to go to war so bad, don't you? Oh, you do. And like, oh my God. And this has been, it's not funny, but it's been rolling through my mind this entire time. We know what Trump would be doing right now if he were president. Effectively nothing. You know, blaming Ukrainians for them being bombed and killed. But we also have to think about what Bush would do. And Bush Cheney team would be in Ukraine right now. Consequences be damned, committing however many soldiers to the on the ground. And you know, we would be in for a long quagmire. As you know, you hear her saying, she's like, the Russian army is not even that strong. Nah, that's a Cheney. That's a little neocon in there being like, oh, I think we can take them. Great, yeah. You know what I don't think? I don't think Putin is a stable actor. I don't think he's a reliable one. And I would not bet on him not using nuclear weapons. And like, when someone wants to use chemical weapons, is your response like, cool, let's send our people in there? I don't know. Yeah. I that's not the kind of leader I would be. But I do understand, this is the entire last point, the entire thing with trying to exercise a certain amount of restraint. No matter which party is in power, the opposition party will always say that they look weak. You know, always say it. And it happened under Obama. He did put a red line, and then he put it to Congress when it came to Syria and their use of chemical weapons. And Congress, in fact, said no. So it's an interesting strategy. I don't know if Congress would still say no, at least not the Senate. But yeah, putting it actually to a vote with our elected representatives, that could be an option.
Yeah, that's true. I've been trying to get a sense of that. And we are, because of the stakes, we're pointing out those who we feel are actively encouraging a push for war. But I am not doing so because I believe that they're widely representative, whether they're, you know, reporters or elected representatives. I do think that thankfully, the nature of this conflict, the push for war is far more muted than it was in all of the other ones, I think, because it's always been there. I don't think that there are many politicians that are hot for us to get directly involved. You have like John Kennedy, occasionally Lindsey Graham, you have some pundits,
Kissinger,
Sean Hannity, Kissinger, of course. He doesn't even know what
and
the conflict
then
is.
The entire press corps.
Yeah, and the entire press corps, unfortunately. And look, the interesting thing is, you point out, I think rightly, her comment about the Russian military. Like, thus far, they do seem to be having far more trouble. We've been reporting on that regularly. But we're reporting that because we believe it to be reflective of the situation on the ground, not because like, so let's get in there and let's do this thing. But it really does feel like that with Liz Cheney. As you said, I think we can take them. But let's finesse that a bit. That's Liz Cheney saying, I think we can take them. And if we can't, ain't gonna affect me. I'll make some money off it either way, because we'll sell the weapons. I'm never gonna be within 3,000 miles of it. If they nuke a few cities, I'll stay out of city centers and I'll be perfectly fine. We are focusing on the stakes as they apply to as many people as possible. Those who would benefit from the war are the most insulated from it on both the American and Russian sides.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Now, we want to let you know about some other updates of what's been going on over the past few days on the ground, including that, and again, grains of salt, as always. We're almost a month into this, massive grains of salt on anything that has not been confirmed by multiple parties. Ukraine's foreign ministry accused Russia of forcibly relocating thousands of children from the eastern Donbas region to Russia. They said almost 2,400 children were taken from their parents on a single day, March 19th. That claim could not be independently confirmed. And it's a big one, one would want it to be, but that is what they are saying. In addition, Russian forces apparently bombed an art school in Mariupol that was sheltering around 400 civilians. That follows up the theater that was bombed, where well over 1,000 civilians were sheltering. Seems like kind of a pattern, potentially. A mall was just destroyed, killing at least 8 people. And there's video going around. In fact, I saw CNN right before we went live was using it. I considered it to be difficult to 100% confirm exactly what was happening in the video, so we chose not to use it. But it appears to show protesters, peaceful protesters in Kherson, being fired upon by Russian forces. There is some video of people that had been bloodied. It is not clear if they were just close to flashbangs or if there was active live ammunition being used on the protesters, which is why we are deciding to slow roll actually using it. But we've been worried about that. There's been a lot of intimidation of peaceful protesters in the cities that have been taken over by Russian forces, Francesca. If this is signaling a willingness to disperse these crowds with force, that is a scary change for Russia to be making.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're going to continue to do that as there's more and more dissent within Russian society. And again, as information cracks actually leak through and Russians understand what's going on. I mean, I think especially if this is being sold to the Russian people as a targeted military exercise or just like strike or operation, then that's the kind of thing that should be done in a couple weeks, correct? Right? It shouldn't be a prolonged war if it's not actually a war, but here it is, it's prolonging. The thing I'm gonna say is also, I think it's very interesting that Putin doesn't really have a line as to what he wants with Ukraine. This is not, I'm going to save the Ukrainian people. This is not even, you know, sort of that, you know, American veneer of benevolent intervention as we often do. This is just, nah, it's mine, I want it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it, because if he really was concerned about the Russian minorities or Russian speaking minorities in the eastern provinces of Ukraine, then why are you kidnapping children? Why are there also reports of people being forced into labor camps or disappeared once they reach the Russian side? Maybe Russia's actually not much better. If you're open firing on your protesters, then what are we doing here? What are you spreading? It's definitely not freedom or civil rights or whatever democracy, definitely not democracy.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to see. And it's just it's mine and I want it and it's mine now.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, when we say what he wants, there's like different levels of want. Want can mean is serious about pursuing rather than we believe is reflective of a desire inside of his heart. The idea that he cares about Russian speaking people in Ukraine. He's got $200 billion and he murders his political opponents. He doesn't care about regular people in literally any context.
No.
But he might be willing to do certain things in advance of the supposed goal that means nothing to him personally. He seems to want to do maximum damage in pursuit of getting things, with the things possibly being those regions, more control of the Ukrainian government, demilitarization, God only knows. And the question is going to be how far he's willing to go, how barbarous he's willing to be before hopefully making some sort of deal. And even a deal itself isn't necessarily, like one of the fears I think on the Ukrainian side is if they take one of these deals, especially if they like transfer over, you know, the contested regions, for how long? How long does that stand?
Yes.
Do you then just have Russian forces that move into and permanently camp in those areas and then they invade again in a year? There's a lot of fears about where this could go long term. Now that said, we want to jump into something very different. Bearing in mind massive grains of salt in terms of speculation about what could be happening inside of Russia. The chief directorate of intelligence of the Ministry of Defense in Ukraine has an interesting theory slash update about what could be going on domestically. They say a group of influential people who oppose President Vladimir Putin and who plan to assassinate him are forming among the Russian business and political elite, saying, quote, a part of Russia's political elite sees Federal Security Service Director Alexander Bortnikov as Putin's successor. It is Bortnikov who has recently fallen out of favor with the Russian dictator. The official reason for the FSS leader's downfall is fatal miscalculations in the war against Ukraine. So supposedly Bortnikov and the department that he's in charge of was responsible for analyzing the views of the Ukrainian population and the capacity of the Ukrainian army. It's known that Bortnikov and some other influential members of the Russian elite are considering various options for removing Putin from power. In particular, poisoning, sudden illness, or other accident is not excluded. So this is obviously incredibly dramatic. We caution hesitance for any news like this and pretty much anything. When it is coming from Ukrainian intelligence and it paints a picture of a guy who not only had bungled his job, but might soon be in charge, and they say might be the guy responsible for warning the Ukrainian government about the groups coming in to attempt to assassinate Zelensky. That to me, Francesca, seems a little bit too good to be true if you believe this is a path that should be walked down.
Yeah, especially because like Russia poison, like where would they even get access? Like I don't, accidents, making stuff like in what, they'd have to learn real quick how to do that because you know, they've never done it before. Against any opposition members or civilians. Mm-hmm. Look, you can't have all the yachts of the oligarchs seized before they're gonna start to get kind of uppity, you know? They're gonna be mad. Putin should have at least been like, okay, look, you come to my $1 billion castle, you hang out, we do boonga boonga. I don't ever wanna know what that means again. I've tried to forget it for many years. Like, you know. We'll get a bounce house or whatever he promises them to just sort of allay their fears. Otherwise, yeah, they're gonna come for the king. Here's the question. When you come for the king, you can't miss. And so I am very nervous for these people. But yeah, we will see. Yeah. And of course, Putin will probably call it all a State Department op, along with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Funny how.
Definitely. Yeah, just be careful. I've watched a lot of Succession. Go very carefully. Anyway, what I would personally say is, and again, there's a lot of things that we cannot confirm. This is seven steps further that nothing can be confirmed. If I was like, this is probably intended, like let's say that it's not at all true. It's probably intended to make Putin even more paranoid than he already is. And he is very paranoid. Right. You know who should be paranoid with this out there? Is Bortnikov. I doubt he likes this being reported by the Ukrainians. No. Like, no, dude, I'm totally not trying to do this. Everybody back off. But anyway, again, impossible to say. They added, though, in addition to this stuff about a possible uprising, that another group, a Russian mercenary group called Liga, is arriving in Ukraine with the goal being to eliminate top military and political leadership of Ukraine, where some other groups previously had failed in that task. Jesus. So we will see. But Francesca, I saved kind of the most controversial for last. I want your opinion about this.
Yeah.
So big news, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announced on Saturday that the country is combining all national TV stations into a singular platform in an effort to combat Russian disinformation. The new platform called United News is a national security measure given, quote, the direct military aggression of the Russian Federation, the active dissemination of misinformation by the aggressor state, and distortion of information, as well as justifying or denying the armed aggression of Russia against Ukraine. That is all from a statement from the president's office. Says that this announcement, obviously, which is under a state of martial law, means the suspension of privately owned and operated media outlets in Ukraine. Zelensky said the new platform is critical to tell the truth about the war. So they are obviously in the middle of a devastating war, multiple cities being besieged, a lot of chaos, and obviously a massive amount of disinformation inside and outside of Ukraine. It's a pretty big change though. What do you think about that?
I mean, usually this is a move, right? That embattled leaders who are embattled by their own people and are trying to consolidate power do. In this case, there is a neighboring state that has far more money and weaponry and power that is attacking them. And not only that, has cut off electricity to Ukraine multiple times, has meddled in like their internet access, has done a bunch of stuff. So honestly, in times of emergency and war, I don't see this as some grand crackdown on freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's cutting off like public access channels of Ukrainians. He's not suspending Facebook. He's not suspending YouTube. He's not suspending TikTok. You know who is? That's Putin. So he's not going after people getting information out. He's actually going after, and oftentimes, especially in countries in the global south, the media is in the hands of a few, I mean, in this country as well, in the hands of a few oligarchs, right? And I don't know who those folks are. I don't know the history of you know, telecommunications in Ukraine. I don't know if those people are Russian sympathizers and or if they are, you know, sort of feeding out a lot of Putin propaganda. I don't want to call it all of Russia. But I just see this move as like, honestly, I think it's a good one. And I'm not going to say like, oh my God, freedom of speech. The dude has got like a million assassination attempts on him. He's defending his country when no one else will. I think we can cut him some slack. If this continues and he's like, nobody can have a news channel except for me. Obviously, that's cause for concern. But these are extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, when they're literally bombing all the cities. Yeah, I would just want to know that, like, as soon as the situation is resolved, this should have an automatic contingency for its ending. Especially when it's combined with, you know, this weekend, they decided to block the activities of 11 different political parties, saying that, quote, any activity of politicians aimed at splitting or collaborating will not succeed. Everyone must now take care of the interest of our state, the interest of Ukraine. Okay, well, obviously, I'm not, you know, the Ukrainian domestic politics expert or anything like that. So I don't know about the history or activities of these 11 different parties. And there are extenuating circumstances. That said, a democratic free country needs to come out of the other side of this as well. That is what the whole point is. That's what international, you know, solidarity with Ukraine is about. It's about saving lives and maintaining the system of government that people are fighting for right now. And so I know everything that you say. Just want to, you know, make sure that they come out of this with the same sort of system of government and press that they did before.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I think that's definitely a bad look and not a good move to say, hey, opposition parties, you are essentially no longer. But at the same time, again, this is an embattled president. I get it. But that's, you need your parties. You need these parties to work with you and support you. Mm-hmm. But here's what I will say, like, I don't know if I have a standing to say that Ukraine should emerge from this a democracy or else. I think Ukraine.
Well, I'm not saying or else.
But I mean, I think the goal is Ukraine needs to emerge Ukraine. Like, Ukraine should emerge from this. I think their goal is to just have a country. I think if you ask most Ukrainians, I mean, I don't know, but I don't think that their number one concern right now is anything but making sure there's a country to come back to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, we will be watching. And on that note, we will have to end because there's so much more to get to. So nobody go anywhere. We've got one member of the Supreme Court sick amidst the pandemic, another potentially entering soon. We're gonna break that down in a lot more after this. Welcome back, everyone. We've got a lot more show for you. Why don't we start off with this? Just as the nomination hearing, the testimony of Ketanji Brown Jackson to potentially join the Supreme Court is going on, we find out that Justice Clarence Thomas, a 73-year-old, back on Friday was hospitalized with an infection. Now, he is expected to be released within the next couple of days, but we can give you a little bit of the details from the statement that was put out. They said that he experienced flu-like symptoms. He underwent tests, was diagnosed with an infection, is being treated with intravenous antibiotics. His symptoms are abating, he is resting comfortably, and he expects to be released from a hospital in a day or two. So he will participate in the consideration and discussion of any cases for which he is not present on the basis of briefs, transcripts, and audio of the oral arguments. And if he has any questions he wants to ask, I would be shocked. So anyway, the flu still exists, obviously, Francesca. It is possible that his flu-like symptoms are from the flu. What do you think?
Nah, man. Come on, man.
You think there's no debate?
I just pulled a sincere Biden. Come on, man.
Come on, man, that's malarkey.
That's what I thought for the first few days of Omicron. Homie-cron. Yeah, I think you had COVID. Come on.
You think he had COVID? He's 73.
The flu bounced. The flu was like, oh, my work is done. Goodbye. You deal with humanity. I've plagued them long enough. Does anyone even get the flu? No.
I think some still do, but.
Oh, God. No, I'm so glad he's recovered. Yay.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't wish death or suffering on anyone. That is
nobody.
Our policy.
Even though your wife was there during the Stop the Steal rally, that's your right. Oh my God, you go off, Justice.
I am being completely sincere. I know I'll probably get criticized. Look, here's what I do not want Justice Thomas or any other justice to be sick. We've had a lot of suffering.
Except for Kavanaugh.
And death. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Kavanaugh. Bad hangover, maybe. He's probably getting those regularly. But here is what I would say to Justice Clarence Thomas. Dude, you're 73 now, and you're not getting any healthier. That's a natural state of things. It's unfortunate, but we can't run from it. We have to accept that. So you have a wife. You guys have shared interests, like destroying our democracy. Why not retire and get to spend your golden years or whatever together, insurrecting.
Yeah.
Like spend those years together rather than just sitting like a lump on the SCOTUS, not saying anything, having no personal investment in anything that's done, and just slowly chipping away at our country and our values. Go off and be active on the ground. Go to some Trump rallies with Ginny. Come on. Isn't that a better use of your time?
Never gonna happen.
Now he's just, nobody retires anymore, I guess. I mean, Breyer retired. Can a right winger retire? Not under Biden, I guess, right?
Under Biden. Nope.
Yeah.
And well, those things, retirements are only for Trump. Three. I can't even. COVID comes back every time I think
of it. Flu-like symptoms. Okay, Francesca, isn't it time to retire and spend your golden year? Anyway.
Oh my God, I want to retire so hard. Please let me retire. If I were him, I would love to. Let's Freaky Friday this. And I don't know actually what that means. I was like, I'll be a justice, you be me.
I think that's the Freaky Friday reboot we need. A kid switches with a Supreme Court justice. Clarence Thomas gets to ride a skateboard. And she gets to defend reproductive rights.
And kids still have moral centers, so
exactly.
We'll all be fine.
I'm gonna write that script, and no one's gonna like it. Anyway, as Clarence Thomas is dealing with his flu-like symptoms and is expected to recover soon, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the process is in motion, testifying literally as we're recording this. Already this morning, Lindsey Graham tried to get a sequel going to his Kavanaugh testimony where he got really red in the face and was aggrieved about everything. Here's the difference though. The Democrats technically have 50 votes. So whether it's Lindsey Graham's comments or perhaps we'll return to Josh Hawley's pedophilia smear, it shouldn't matter, right, Francesca? They've got the votes. What do you think?
Do they? I don't know. Who knows what kind of deals Sinema and Manchin have been making, right? I don't know if anything. I don't know if we've ever had 50 votes on anything except for daylight savings time, which we had many more than 50 votes.
Weirdly enough.
Strangely. Look, every time, it's just incredible, and it hits you in the face just so much when you watch. You know, and compare Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation to Brett Kavanaugh's, right? Yep. You've got Kavanaugh, who the right just made such a martyr. How dare you? Oh, how dare you accuse this man, even though he was definitely accused and definitely lied to our faces about all the ridiculous things that he talked about in his yearbook or whatever the hell. Yep. How dare you make him feel bad? He's just a little boy. And then he cries and everything's fine. Ketanji Brown Jackson, you've got Lindsey Graham in his face, in her face, basically being like, there were other black women. There are other black women who are qualified. What about you? You know, and like, I'm not even gonna consider race, but, and just like the amount of racism, the white privilege, like all you need, again, we don't need CRT. You just compare these two confirmation hearings. Yeah. And I send all of my strength out to anyone. Cause it's not just Ketanji Brown Jackson, there have been other hearings. And for people that Republicans have successfully blocked of Biden's, I just send all of my strength out to that because it takes so much wherewithal to be calm, swallow your pride, and let Lindsey Graham bark in your face and disrespect you on a national stage. Yeah. And then know pretty soon you're going to be a goddamn justice. So I just, yeah, it's
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
That's the way that it should go. And couldn't we use it as a people? Look, it's not even that, like if you were to get together like a council of the best progressives in the country, could they find other people that they'd prefer? I'm sure that they could. But let's take wins where we can get them. The fact that Biden's even maybe gonna get a nominee is great. And that also he put forward a shortlist and she was the best on the shortlist and they went with her.
Yeah.
Rather than the more pro corporate, pro law enforcement, like this could have, when was the last time something could have been worse and in the end wasn't?
Yeah.
It's been a good while. So let's take this. And by the way, they're gonna try to stop it. But it is an unpopular thing as of right now to do so. According to a Monmouth poll on this, 55% support confirming Ketanji Brown Jackson. 21% say no, 24% are unsure, which I personally think is fine. It's a Supreme Court nomination. One quarter of the country is not gonna pay attention. Democrats are overwhelmingly supportive. Who are the 3% of Democrats who are against it? I don't know. Independents basically are even more supportive than the population at large. It's only Republicans that are against it. And even one third of them are like, it just seems fine. Just let her on. Like we've talked before about Supreme Court confirmation battles being an election issue. They've decided to go up against a woman who is at least as of this point quite popular. And they're making that one of the big multi-week debates of the election. So interesting strategy from the Republicans there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm seeing how people are reacting to how she's being treated. And I'm like, yeah, there's no excuse. There's no excuse to treat a nominee like this, you know? But then again, like, you know, the right has long said goodbye to respectability politics. And I wish the left would, or the liberals would, a little bit more so they could stand up for their side. Yeah. On this, because nobody deserves to be treated so horribly. But yeah, so we will see. And it still doesn't matter because, Roe v. Wade is being completely torn to shreds and states across this country are currently legislating for its demise. So Republicans still get what they want. My question is, who comes after Ketanji? Hopefully if she gets confirmed.
Hero. All right.
No, what comes next?
It's a long fight.
Expanding the effing courts.
I agree. It's Biden. So you know how likely that is. We fight all battles. We fight the immediate battles. We fight the outside of elected politics battles. We fight the elected politics battles. We fight the long-term battles.
Don't this talk is a long-term strategy battle. With me, so, John Iderola.
And I will just say, in terms of strategy, in terms of consequences, the only thing at this point that can sink this thing is, again, if Manchin and Sinema go against it. But I mean, come on, if they were to do that, Biden would be infuriated. Think of the consequences.
Nope.
We'll see what happens. Anyway, I'm sure tomorrow we'll have some more video and stuff like that, because the Republicans are going to be like, they can't necessarily stop this, but they're going to be competing with one another to be the most insane to fundraise off of. Let's jump into something very different with this.
Tell you a secret. Most people don't really know what capitalism is. Most people don't even know what socialism is. But most people are not capitalists because they don't have capitalist money. They're not billionaires. Sometimes the label doesn't matter as much as just talking about policies. That's easier to understand. Do you think people should die because they can't afford insulin? Do you think that fossil fuel CEO should decide whether the planet gets set on fire? Me neither.
So in the Instagram Live, AOC makes a couple of specific points that are indisputable. And so in attacking her, Fox News is not going to attempt to dispute those. They're gonna get real creepy with it. Take a look at this.
AOC doing that, I don't feel that tingling pleasure. I want to gnaw at my hands. I want to pull my eyes out. I want to scream and run out of the room.
What if she ate a chicken bone. Would that make you feel a sensation?
It would stop her talking. It would stop her advocating the virtues of socialism. I mean, I know I didn't know about this. I thought when I first saw this video that she just had followed the Joe Biden thing and thought that that really weird, creepy whisper thing that Biden sometimes does works really well as a means of communication, so well that she's trying it as well. I didn't know that it could be any bigger scene.
Did she steal this move from Biden, or do you think Biden stole it from her? Or do you think Biden has no idea what this means?
I have no idea how someone like that is being paid millions of dollars to analyze politics live. So their thing is, we're not going to actually rebut any of AOC's points. We're not going to answer those questions about insulin or about the devastation of our climate or anything. We're going to debate whether she is whispering to be like Biden, because as we all know, Biden invented whispering back in 1963. It was a hot summer and it was a cool new way to communicate. Or if she's doing ASMR.
That's a true story.
Yeah. Which is what his "I didn't feel the weird tingling pleasure" was. That's ostensibly why he said it. Also, the fact that when they come back from a live video of AOC, he talks about tingling pleasure and Jesse Waters talks about eating a bone. Those are just random things. They're not sexualizing her in a weird, creepy way or anything, Francesca. What do you think?
I mean, they've all saved that video. They're like, that is for later. But my question is, engage with the substance. Engage with what she says. What do you think about that, Jesse Waters? Mm-hmm. Are you a capitalist? How much money do you have? You know, like, and because it is a good point. First of all, I don't know why she was whispering. I think it's a fun like device to be sort of. It's a comical device. It's a comedian, yeah. I could say. It's a comical device.
You know.
Her boyfriend was asleep, which I also get, and just be like, hey. But it's a good point, right? Most people do throw around these terms and they don't actually know what it means. And truly, it doesn't actually mean all that much until you really put it into concrete terms like that. You know, yes, do we want, can we afford to have infinite growth on a finite planet the way capitalism says and just have endless, endless, endless GDP, 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 even though GDP doesn't reflect any kind of quality of life and living? No, I don't believe in that. Call me anti-capitalist. I don't think I am. I still shop online, sadly, because it's the only way I feel the sadness from capitalism. I mean, that's how it works. I'm stuck in a sort of hamster wheel. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Is that desirable? Is that possible? And look, they didn't address the specific claims about the price of insulin and those sorts of things because they don't want to. They know that there are people watching that are devastated by the price of their insulin. Republicans who are paying tons of money, they're there to distract Republicans from taking a long, serious, hard look at their economic state, their lot in life, and wondering why Republicans never address it, why they never try to solve it. So they don't address that. They also don't address the meta commentary about these labels. Most people, including every single host on Fox, has no idea what capitalism is or socialism is, or to the extent that they do, they lie about it. They understand of course, on some level that America is a mix of freedoms and regulations. That is what it is. It's a spectrum. It's not two little boxes that you either are in one or you're in the other. What she's saying is that people care about the questions that affect their life specifics rather than just these labels. And they couldn't rebut that if they wanted to, and they don't even try. Now, briefly, I want to jump ahead to this because of all of the people to try to attack her on this, I'm going to go to this Tim Pool tweet who says AOC should have Googled the definition of capitalist before making this video, but I hope the ASMR channel works for her. Again, have these people never heard of whispering? I think it's very weird, but maybe not, because this is the same Tim Pool who just a few days ago tweeted, I went to a diner with my girlfriend and was told it was a 20-minute wait. After only a few minutes, a couple walked in and was seated right away. I complained and left right away. I don't tolerate bull-ass, and I don't tolerate people who think I should care when they do. The dude has never heard of reservations. He's never heard that, like, maybe they were there a few minutes ago. They put their name down, then went outside to make a phone call or something. This is the guy that's gonna be critiquing her ability to talk about political ideology and political economy? I don't think so. Anyway.
I mean, and sadly, like, explain yourself, Tim Pool. How's capitalism working out for you, right? And mostly, you know, do you believe in free competition? Well, we don't really have that right now because we have an incredible amount of conglomerates. Amazon just buys MGM, no big deal. We have, you know, an insane system that is like feeding on corporate handouts. I mean, excuse me, government handouts, right? Like all of the amount of subsidies that we give to fossil fuel industries, to big agriculture, all that kind of stuff. What do you mean by capitalism? Usually it's all in this like, well, the invisible hand of the market. And when Milton Friedman, Milton Friedman was a sucker, okay? And none of that has panned out. And all of it has just meant you work longer hours for less pay. What you want to do with that? That's exploitation. That's capitalist exploitation. That's how it's working out for 99% of Americans. So I love when people are like, I am a capitalist. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In your little petri dish of libertarianism where everything works out, you know, in your little Sim City, you know, but like in the real world, it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah. They say they're pro-capitalist. All they are is they're pro-establishment. They are pro the ones who are currently winning through a combination of things we associate with capitalism and things we associate with socialism. Subsidies in some cases, freedoms of regulations in others. They're doing fine right now, and I would very much like them to continue doing fine. You can call it whatever you want, and they do. They call it pro-capitalist. It ain't capitalist. It's pro-status quo. That's all it is. Who do you think he was really at that diner with? You think he was with anybody? I think he was alone.
My girlfriend, who is real.
We walked in and she's right out of frame, and we tried to get a table. Anyway, you wouldn't know her. She goes to a diner in Canada. Anyway,
that was all like a tweet just to say that he had a girlfriend.
That's all it was.
You know what I mean? Like,
all it was.
I love how you have to couch it in like him being a douche when he couldn't just be like, I love my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Her name is Melissa. She's like really sweet.
Maybe he does. Like we always say, there are a lot of really awful conservative guys. Women can also be awful conservatives too. Never forget it. And with that said, we're gonna have to take a break. When we come back though, someone working for Trump is revealing some information about January 6th that they've apparently already revealed to the January 6th commission. It's exciting stuff, and we'll break it down after this. Okay, a couple of important updates for everyone out there, including that today is a Monday. So we will be doing our top 10 list. On the pre-show today, I talked about the fact that South Carolina has once again reinstated the firing squad as an option for capital punishment. We are going to do our top 10 ways we would like to go if we were required to. If the state was going to snuff us out, how would we want to go? We'll be breaking it down. It's a bit of a dark one this week, but it'll be fun. Also, reminder, as I gave on Friday, Damage Report available on Instagram and TikTok at The Damage Report at John Iderola. Give us a little follow. We're having some fun on there. I'm just saying, you can miss it or not. That's up to you. And with that said, let's jump back into the news. We all know that Donald Trump inspired the crowd that marched to the Capitol and did the insurrection on January 6th. But they've been saying this whole time that had nothing to do with us. There can't be any legal consequences. Certainly, we just gave a little speech and then some people did what they did. But a new revelation implies that the connection is stronger than they'd like it to be. Donald Trump's White House chief of staff and a national campaign spokesperson were apparently involved in efforts to encourage the president's supporters to march to the Capitol back on January 6th. This is not according to me. This is according to a person who says he overheard a key planning conversation between top Trump officials and organizers of the January 6th rally on the White House ellipse. And importantly, we're finding out about this now, but he already testified at the January 6th commission a few months ago. And here's what he revealed. He being Scott Johnston, who worked on the team that helped plan the ellipse rally, claims that leading figures in the Trump administration and campaign deliberately planned to have crowds converge on the Capitol and, quote, make it look like they went down there on their own. So there's some intentionality to it. They knew what they were doing. They were trying to hide their involvement. So Johnston says that he overheard Mark Meadows, then former President Trump's chief of staff, and Katrina Pearson, Trump's national campaign spokeswoman, talking with Kylie Kremer, the executive director of Women for America First, about plans for a march to the Capitol. Scott Johnston says they were very open about how there was going to be a march. Everyone knew there was going to be a march, but they decided against officially permitting the march because of the costs about security. After all, they don't want there to be security. They want there to be chaos. And about the optics of a sitting president organizing a push towards Congress as the election was being certified. So Johnston tells Rolling Stone they plan to, quote, direct the people down there and make it look like they went down there on their own. So this is a person who was involved in the planning of the speech. We'll have to see how credible the January 6th Commission considers them, Francesca, but they were certainly there to know.
I mean, yeah, we all saw it play out. This is exactly how it played out. So my guess is they probably discussed how it was gonna play out, where Trump was like, we're gonna march there, I'm gonna be behind you, but like not really, and you're gonna go, but I didn't say, but we're gonna go, you're mostly gonna go. Like, yeah, I think that is the key word, make it look like they went down there on their own. But yeah, even though, you know, we're talking all different folks, from, you know, official GOP accounts like the Arizona Republican Party tweeting out Ali Alexander, the planner of the Stop the Steal rally, like, he's ready, are you? And that was Ali Alexander saying, I'm willing to give my life.
Yeah.
And they're saying, yeah, man, are you ready to give your life? So not only was it a march, and that's what Republicans will have us believe, this was a march that got out of hand. No. It was a march that absolutely had two intentions. One of intimidation, and specifically in the goal to overturn the election. But two, intimidation through violent measures. At no point was there, this is a peaceful march, everybody assemble peacefully. When you have a permit and there is a perimeter, although let's be real, I don't know if the cops would have even done that much, it's generally more organized. Right? And there is an understanding that this is a peaceful march. But if it's just kind of a free for all, not only does it save you by saying, hey, we didn't plan it, but it saves you by saying, well, we have less police on hand, so we get to do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, you're totally right. And the devastating point about him mentioning it, now that we find out more about how they were planning to get them to go there, but create fake distance. When Trump just said, you're gonna march down there, do you think all the organizers are like, you idiot, you had one job. Don't tell them directly to go there, you dingus.
It would have been much funnier to hear him be like, we're gonna do a thing, it's gonna be a big thing, we're gonna march to a place, begins with a C, ends with an apital. You know, like if what he always does, you know, kind of like hinting but never saying. No, he just said it.
No, he just said it. And somehow that's not enough. You need Scott Johnston talking to the January 6th committee, because for some reason the president saying it live on TV isn't implicating enough. By the way, this is also the guy who says, not only does he know about them using burner phones, but he bought the burner phones. So kind of interesting that he's cooperating. Anyway, with that said, we're very low on time, so let's jump into our next topic, our last topic of the hour with this video.
Me, you can't do that, officer, because I called for your supervisor.
Out.
I have my
license.
What is the reason
I'm getting out? Give your information. I told you.
I didn't refuse. I asked.
Now you're resisting.
I haven't refused. I asked to speak to your supervisor.
Get out.
Sir, I feel uncomfortable. Please get your supervisor.
I don't give a
f. Touch me.
I said get out.
Please stop it. Why are you being like this? Is this is how y'all really are? Please stop. This is all on tape. Please stop.
Get out of the car.
Please don't hurt me. Why are you doing this? No, sir.
I'm telling you, get out.
I'm telling you that this is not lawful. Ah! Oh my God, that's not lawful, sir.
Get out!
That's not lawful.
Get out!
I can't tell you how much I hate seeing that sort of situation just playing out day after day after day after day. And we're, I guess, lucky in some way that the video makes it indisputable. Like, you can't argue that cops aren't doing this sort of thing. But if you resist in asking why you're being pulled over, wanting to have a human conversation with the cop that's pulling you over, they will try to brutally pull you out of the car and then hit you with a taser. Like, if we didn't have the video, he would pretend that the guy fought back, that the guy was cussing him out. And think about the people who say just comply. They say don't fight. You don't think that every single conservative who tells people that asks questions, wants to know why they're being arrested, why they're being dragged out of their car?
Yes.
He asked simple questions calmly and nonviolently. And the escalation continued 100% coming from the cop, Francesca.
Yeah, he lost his cool. He got so upset because this guy was just asking him questions. Wow, that's some training, you know? I love when we're always told that cops just need more training. I don't know, maybe you need like a silent meditation retreat, bro. Maybe so you can like calm the F down. And when someone talks back to you, know how to like, you know, keep your cool. He's not posing a threat to you. He doesn't have a gun. He's handing you his registration and license, right? And I also honestly kind of hats off to the guy who filmed himself. Number one, for defending his right to film, but also he didn't comply. He wasn't trying to just be a subservient person in this yeah. matter. I honestly respect that he was a little bit like, yeah, no, you're gonna have to explain to me what's going on here. And obviously I'm so glad that this didn't end even worse, because yeah. we've seen it end even worse. So it took yeah. a lot of bravery.
It does, and definitely record. They hate when you record because it makes clear what happened. They haven't even identified this guy, let alone give it any consequences. So thank God we have the footage. Now that yes. said, don't go anywhere. If you do, I'm gonna find you, because we got some amazing stuff to talk about, including Matt Gaetz going for another round. We'll have that for you in just a couple minutes.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.